From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
He's called us rapists, murderers, he's called us criminals, he's called us drug dealers, and that's extremely offensive to us.
That was a protester speaking outside NBC's studios in New York City last November as Donald Trump was set to host the network's Saturday Night Live program. Since he announced his candidacy last June, whether it was Latinos, Muslims, other politicians, or anyone else who struck his fancy, Trump saw his popularity rise like a hot air balloon with each verbal attack. But Monday's Iowa caucus appeared to let some of the air out of that balloon as Ted Cruz ended up the winner on the Republican side, taking 28% of the count to Trump's 24%. That despite the rock star treatment that Trump's received from the media and a recent spending frenzy as the caucus date drew near. We haven't received word from Cruz's campaign as of press time, but the mood at Trump's headquarters might be best summed up by the candidate himself in his own words, taken from various news reports over the past months.
We have losers. We have losers.
Well, Rosie's a loser. She's always been a loser.
You know, when I watch a George Will or a Charles Krauthammer, you know, I watch them for years. They're losers. They're just losers.
You know, she suffers from a thing called loser's remorse. She lost. Cher is somewhat of a loser. She's lonely. She's unhappy.
Using terms like dummy, loser, total losers. Is that something you would continue doing if you were president?
Oh, I don't think. Look, when people attack me, I, you know, let them have it back.
Meanwhile, Democrats Bernie Sanders and the previously presumed front-runner Hillary Clinton ended in a virtual tie at 23 delegates for Clinton and 21 for Sanders. Final vote counts showed the former Secretary of State narrowly leading the Vermont senator. RT's Guyan Chichikayan reports.
The race between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders in Iowa got so tight that at one point it showed exactly 50-50. But despite the tie, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton declared victory.
I stand here tonight breathing a big sigh of relief. Thank you, Iowa. Let's go win the nomination. Thank you all and God bless you.
Hillary Clinton's sigh of relief could be premature. Very few people expected such success for Bernie Sanders, even though a tie. He already said it was an ideological win for him and for his ideas. From the very beginning, Bernie Sanders was up against a very organized campaign.
It looks like we are in a virtual tie. We had no money, we had no name recognition, and we were taking on the most powerful political organization in the United States of America.
Sanders is hugely popular among young voters who don't want to see a continuation of the same policies, and that is pretty much what Hillary Clinton represents for them. Sanders really resonates with the young voters with his calls to take on Wall Street, to make health care and education free. His success in Iowa can make it very difficult for Hillary Clinton to secure the Democratic nomination. She's already said to be lacking in voter enthusiasm, although she's still the frontrunner in national polls. But many states can flip if they see Sanders succeeding.
For his part, Sanders was elated over his very strong showing against the candidate whose supporters have touted as the one most electable. Aside from the crowd of Democrats and Republicans monopolizing the attention of the media here, there are other candidates running whose views, apparently, are not in favor with the small group that sets editorial policy in the U.S. Brian Becker, host of Radio Sputnik's daily program Loud and Clear, hosted two of them. Jill Stein, who's seeking another run as the Green Party's candidate, and Gloria LaRiva, the candidate of the Party for Socialism and Liberation. They spoke about the results in Iowa and the road going forward to November and beyond.
Some surprises in the Iowa caucuses. Of course, the big news, I would say, is that Bernie Sanders, who was considered a non-factor in the election just a few months ago, who was down by almost 40 percentage points, appears to be tied, a virtual dead heat, with Hillary Clinton. Jill Stein, what accounts for that?
Well, I think you have an American people that are in an all-out revolt. And we see that both within the Republican Party, we see it inside of the Democratic Party, and we also see it outside of the two major parties where, you know, where the numbers are also growing, according to polls at least. The latest Wall Street Journal poll this summer showed that, you know, that Americans rejecting both parties were at an all-time high. So I think we see politics as usual very much collapsing in on itself. And Bernie Sanders, I think, you know, has been running a strong campaign. And the question was, I think, was he going to come out way ahead, which was certainly the hope of his campaign, but they've done very well, you know, to have really thrown down a challenge to Clinton, which is not hard to do, given what the Democratic Party has delivered. And I think, you know, that's really the bottom line here. Can a rebel within a conservative party manage to fight the party, or will this campaign ultimately be reabsorbed by it?
Gloria LaRiva, you, like Jill Stein, are running as an independent. You are running as a socialist for the Party for Socialism and Liberation. Jill Stein is running to seek the nomination of the Green Party. You're both independent parties. You're obviously, neither of you are adhering to the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. You're outside that. But because today's Iowa caucuses were for the Republicans and Democrats, I want to talk a little bit about what these results might mean. And then later in the program, I want to come back to what the question that Jill Stein raised is, can a radical candidate such as Sanders, or one who is a progressive candidate, run inside the Democratic Party without being completely absorbed by the Democratic Party establishment? We're going to come back to that. But first, we have Ted Cruz winning the Republican Party. Number two was Donald Trump. Number three, a surprising a third place strong showing for Marco Rubio. But again, I want to ask you about the Republicans. But first, your take on Bernie Sanders. I think it's a populist revolt, like Jill Stein said, from within the Democratic Party or amongst independents and Democrats. Sanders just spoke on TV and he said, this is a dead heat. This is an amazing victory for them because they didn't have money. They have 3.2 million donors. The average donation is $27, in other words, small donors. And he said the reason they succeeded was because the country is facing enormous problems, then, and we can no longer continue to have establishment politics. We have to fight against establishment politics. What does he mean?
Well, I think that he's reflecting what has been developing in recent years, the last 5 years of independent struggle that we saw with the Occupy movement, the Fight for 15, of people who not only are suffering poverty and great economic insecurity, but that they see the wealth at the top and the resulting poverty and insecurity as a result of that wealth. I think people are absolutely fed up with seeing mega profits and after a $700 billion bailout on every level in the economy, students with a $1.2 trillion debt, not having any guarantee of any kind of job and saddled with a lifetime debt, pharmaceuticals charging $1,000 a day for a pill that could cure hepatitis C. I think people are being bombarded by this economic abuse, repression, exploitation, and they're fed up. So the fact that Bernie Sanders said he would run as a Democrat regardless and not run an independent campaign, that still did not quell the desire of many independents, including young people who, Florida, for example, over 35% of youth do not register as Democrat or Republican. And I think that he's captured much of the young vote, young people who want a future, who saw some hope in Obama. But even under Obama's administration, we saw these struggles developing of people saying, time to get in the streets. And I think that it's very exciting to see this tonight, notwithstanding the fact that Sanders is running as a Democrat, that he has been in the Democrat Party all his political life. But I think that tonight shows that his demands that sound radical but really weren't more than 30 years ago are getting a huge audience, and I think it can only go up for him.
Jill Stein, let me ask you. He said, Bernie Sanders, in his speech after the polls were closed, he said, the American people are saying no to a rigged economy. How does the Green Party view it?
Yes, indeed. It is very much a rigged economy. And as Gloria was saying, you know, people are basically being thrown under the bus. We're told we're in a recovery, but for most Americans, it is an emergency. The jobs that have recovered are largely part-time and temporary jobs. Temporary jobs, in fact, are at an all-time record high right now. Wages are declining, in fact, most steeply for the lowest income groups. Average workers' wages are barely above the poverty level right now. In fact, 40% of workers are making under $20,000 a year. Two-thirds, this just came out the other day, two-thirds of Americans could not afford an emergency $500 expense, like if you had to go to an emergency room and cover your copay. 43 million young people are locked into debt. Black lives are on the firing line, and immigrants are facing deportation, and the wars for oil are blowing back at us madly with failed states and with terrorist threats, in fact, that have only gotten bigger after 15 years now of endless war on terror, and we have a refugee migration crisis, which is absolutely critical, and the climate is melting down, you know? So things are not looking rosy for the vast, overwhelming majority of Americans. Those who are doing well are really the 1% or the 0.1%. 62 billionaires now have the wealth of half of the world's population, 3.5 billion people. And this does not, you know, this is not getting better. It's accelerating in the wrong direction. And, you know, the name of the game here is, you know, can this real change, can a revolution happen in a counter-revolutionary party? And while the result tonight was wonderful, you know, and Bernie's doing very well, all things considered, you know, this was the race where you could do well as New Hampshire. And what he's facing beyond this is, you know, a much steeper uphill battle. We saw the New York Times just come out with an editorial, you know, opposing him, characterizing Hillary as, you know, the one who can get things done. We've just seen the party and the DNC begin to really sharpen its weapons. And, you know, last comment here is that the Democratic Party has shown itself very capable of stopping, really sabotaging populist, popular, progressive campaigns. It has done that repeatedly. It has created an infrastructure to do that between Super Tuesdays and super delegates that Bill Clinton is very quickly rounding up. So, you know, this is going to be an even tougher battle going forward.
Gloria LaRiva, same question to you. I mean, it's completely right what Jill Stein said. The New York Times, the Washington Post, newspapers that are principal sort of organs of the Democratic Party establishment have gone out of their way to tell people, don't vote for Bernie Sanders, vote for Hillary Clinton. It's kind of a gratuitous pre-primary endorsement even before the people got the vote. All of the pundits on corporate-owned media are constantly attacking Bernie Sanders. They make a big case out of the fact that he's a democratic socialist. You are a socialist. But his program seems to me to be, as you said, more or less like a liberal program, like the program of Lyndon Johnson or Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He's not for expropriating, nationalizing the banks or the pharmaceutical companies. And yet the big Democratic Party establishment, not just the Republicans, but the Democratic Party establishment is acting as if it's a revolutionary force, even if it's within, as Jill Stein said, a counter-revolutionary party. Why the alarm from the establishment?
Because he's raising expectations and making very clear on some of the reforms that he's calling for. He's calling for the taxation of the rich, of taxation on the banks, of jailing bankers who violate law. And I think it rings very, very strongly with the people. I think some of the things he's talking about, like free public university education, that existed 60 years, 50 years ago. And the young people don't even realize that. When you tell them, they're shocked, which shows how much has been eroded on the issue of economic rights, including social programs that were won in the 30s and the 50s and the 60s. But I'd like to say that both Jill and I are very aware and have the facts, including even Bernie Sanders, on the economic suffering, the social condition of the people. But what people are not aware of is the very viable reforms that are possible even under capitalism. You only have to point to some European capitalist countries to show what the health condition is, that people have guaranteed health. Not even mentioning Socialist Cuba, for example, which has an excellent health care program that's completely free. But what we are calling for example, is not just prosecuting criminal bankers, but seizing the banks. And people could go, well, how do you do that? Well, why would you give $700 billion of taxpayer money, which we're still paying, and trillions of dollars more in tax breaks to the banks, which has led to the three top banks owning 36% of the equivalent gross domestic product? That is huge. And if they thought they were too big to fail 8 years ago, then surely they'll say they're even bigger and too big to fail. We say seize the banks. We say seize the pharmaceutical corporations, which I think a lot of people would support, especially when they see the criminality of $1,000 for a hepatitis pill when it costs $4 a pill by an Indian pharmaceutical company, that they have just gotten away with literally murder. General Motors was bailed out a few years ago at the cost of thousands of jobs, and yet GM has managed to find a way not to pay for the criminal cover-up of dangerous conditions of their cars that cause death. I mean, when you point the things out to people of the outrageous nature of the capitalist system that we are living in, especially in the United States, I think people will take to the demands that we're raising as socialists and say, yes, it's possible under capitalism today, even though we think ultimately what we need is a socialist system. But this is how far we have come with the media lies, the media idea that we have to depend on the generosity of people like Mark Zuckerberg, who donates some of his multi-billion-dollar wealth to then rename the San Francisco General Hospital to be named Zuckerberg Hospital. I mean, the billionaires now feel that they can be the leaders of the country. It shows that the bankers, the billionaires, and all the corporations are the real government under this system. And so our program is calling for socialism, but we have many, many demands. Seize oil, seize the banks, seize the pharmaceuticals in the interest of the people, and cancel all student debt. We think that this kind of campaign throughout this year, which we've already begun in California and other states in the United States, will ring very well with the people. Bernie Sanders' campaign has helped open the road for that.
Jill Stein, let me ask you, too. Bernie Sanders is inside the Democratic Party now. He's been functioning as an independent. The New York Times or one of the major media ran a story about him that his idol, his hero as a young man was Eugene Debs, who ran as an independent socialist from his jail cell and got 7% of the vote in 1920. He was in jail for opposing the U.S. entrance in World War One. Sanders' campaign was to take it inside the Democratic Party, and his argument would be that you cannot, in American politics, which does not have a parliamentary system, which has a winner-take-all system, and where the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have a legal, maybe corrupt, but legal stranglehold over the American political system, it's not viable to be a third-party candidate and win. But you are committed to a third party. Explain the Green Party's orientation on that.
Yeah, and I think the case of Eugene V. Debs, you know, actually makes the point, because when we had
third parties functioning in this country, when we actually had national third parties that could run a presidential candidate and get 7% of the vote. You know, there was a huge movement around that, and you had candidates running on socialism or on socialist platforms or progressive or farm labor, etc. You had a variety of progressive independent third parties running basically on a socialist agenda that were winning local office, that became mayors, that were on city councils, that became governors, that were representatives not only to their state houses but also to Congress, and were senators as well. And you know, I think Eugene Debs makes the point that when you have a strong national campaign, you can win without winning the office. You can win by advancing the agenda. And when you look historically, when third parties were basically absorbed back into the Democratic Party with the New Deal coalition, you had essentially the collapse of the progressive agenda. And the forward movement basically stopped at that point that the New Deal was implemented. When the third parties disappeared, forward momentum stopped, and it all began to unravel. And it has been unraveling for decades since then, till where we are back, basically, you know, till the Gilded Age right now. And in the words of Frederick Douglass, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. Third parties are not just okay. They're absolutely essential if we are to challenge corporate power. And one of the questions we have to ask now is, what exactly has the Democratic Party done for you that you're willing to trust it? Even supporting, for those who support Bernie Sanders as their candidate, you know, is he in a party that will move this forward? Because truth to tell, the party has had a very effective kill switch that it has used to essentially sabotage progressive campaigns. Jesse Jackson won 12 major Midwestern primaries before the Democratic Party basically undertook a fear campaign and a smear campaign, a PR spin with a lot of TV advertising that brought him down for some remarks that he made, and everybody makes silly remarks sometimes, and they basically sabotaged him in the same way that they did to Howard Dean for the Dean Scream, again, which was for looking a little bit undiplomatic, and you can find tapes of everybody on videotape who does.
I want to turn, though, to what the Republican Party outcomes showed in the Iowa caucuses and where things are going with the Republican Party. Ted, and I want to ask you, Gloria LaRiva, Ted Cruz was number one. He had a certain, 28% of the vote. Next was Trump. Surprisingly strong was Marco Rubio. This is a party that's becoming more and more right-wing. Some people in the left, some people in the liberal movement think Cruz or Trump are representatives of a kind of neo-fascism. What do you make of Trump, of Cruz's victory? Why did it happen?
I think that he appeals to, he applies a demagogic program as well as Trump, and Marco Rubio, who are trying to appeal to the anger that people feel, especially the white population, which may be lower income. I think the statistics show that Trump and Cruz have audiences that tend to have a lower level of income as well as education. And they use xenophobic, racist positions to try to whip people up. It's had some popularity. But I think that the Republican establishment and the ruling class as a whole is concerned about these three candidates, and especially Cruz or Trump, possibly winning the nomination of the Republicans and the presidency, because I believe that it will engender a great movement of opposition. And the same way that people were ready for rebellion under Bush and were cheering in the streets spontaneously the night that Obama won the presidency the first time, I mean, all over the country, and cheered him as he left. They were fed up with war. They were fed up with racism. They were fed up with everything that Bush meant. And I think they would, many, many people would see that as a return to the Bush years. I think that the ruling class is worried they might lose control because they cannot deliver on their outrageous, racist, xenophobic demands, like, you know, building a wall and expelling all the Mexicans and denying the rights of Muslim people to live in the United States. They're fascist ideas, but I don't think that they can carry them out, because the people of the U.S., I think, overwhelmingly believe in what we call bourgeois democratic rights, the right to freedom and the right to democratic basic rights. Ted Cruz tonight made a speech about Judeo-Christian traditions. It's an outrage. And I think this makes a lot of people worried and fearful, but also angry and willing to fight.
Well, just for our listeners who are not only in the United States, but around the world, what makes his reference to a Judeo-Christian tradition outrageous?
Because, first of all, it says that you have to, it's hearkening back to a time when you had to be a Christian and a certain kind of Christian. He talks about conservatism. And it says if you don't believe, if you are from a Muslim or another religion that doesn't conform to what his conservative Christianity, then you are not a valid citizen entitled to the same rights that he's calling for. But it's all demagogy. And it's interesting where Trump tries to speak to those who are suffering economic instability. He says, make America great. But in fact, he is not for an increase in the minimum wage. Here's a billionaire who lives like a billionaire who thinks that the poor should stay poor. And sooner or later, people will see through that. But I think that the ruling class, as I said before, is worried about the mobilization of the vast majority of people in response to a possible victory, if it were to happen, of Cruz or Trump.
I want to ask you, Jill Stein, from the Green Party, the same question. Cruz came out on top. It appeared that he had a big mobilization of evangelical Christians, first and foremost, young and old. Trump came in second. Of course, he's a showman. He's dominated the news. He's been talking outrageously against Muslims, against Latinos, against immigrants. He has defied all of the conventional wisdom, but nonetheless has gotten some base of support, as Gloria mentioned. But then tonight there was a surprisingly strong third candidate, Marco Rubio. And when I was watching CNN and MSNBC and the other corporate-owned media, even though Marco Rubio was coming in third, he came in stronger than expected, and it seemed as if they were promoting him as if this was his night, even though he came in third. It was like, if you listen to the punditry, it was like, this is Marco Rubio's night because he came in third. Is the political establishment looking for an alternative to Trump and Cruz, and could it be Marco Rubio?
Absolutely, and, you know, I think that was one of the questions that was really being played out tonight, and that the press was looking to build on that theme. There has been talk of a brokered convention. You know, if it looked like Trump was going to win it, there'd been talk of bringing Mitt Romney in, and I'm sure that is still ongoing. But Rubio has been sort of the hope of the Republican establishment, that this is at least someone that they could work with, someone who, you know, participated in the so-called Group of Eight or Gang of Eight, whatever they were, in some compromise immigration bill, which was a pretty lousy immigration bill. But at least he plays ball with the political establishment. So you can see where he's kind of the only, he's the only one in striking distance. There's Kasich, there's Bush, what's his name from New Jersey?
Chris Christie.
Yeah, Christie. Yeah. So there's some Republican establishment candidates in this, but they're just way down in the mix, and Rubio seems to be the only one rising up. But I think it's really important to remember here that we're hearing things inside the echo chamber of the Republican Party. The Republican Party now represents 21%, according to the latest Wall Street Journal poll, 21% of the American population. 21%. So even Trump, who's, you know, at best been 30%, now he's less than that, but even 30%,
of 21%, you know, is only about 7%. This is why we need third parties.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.